This is Rainmaker.fm, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at hacktheentrepreneur.com/Rainmaker. That's hacktheentrepreneur.com/Rainmaker.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now, here is your host, John Naxter.
Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. Have I told you that you're awesome? Well, you are. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, John Naxter, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a speaker, consultant, and entrepreneur, as well as a self-proclaimed deviant hippie that is attempting to maximize his God years. Don't worry, you'll get it once you hear our conversation. He's the founder of EngineWorks, a digital strategy firm that uses research, technology, and creativity to help their clients stand out online. They've recently transitioned from a traditional agency model to a fully distributed team. He is also the co-host of the Friendly Fire podcast. Now, let's hack Carl Smith. Let's thank our sponsor, FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. Expense tracking, time tracking, estimates, quotes, reports, and when you can't figure something out, they have absolutely phenomenal award-winning customer support. You can actually call them and get somebody on the phone to help you. Stay on top of your business with a clear picture of its financial health. Try FreshBooks for free today. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have an extra special guest. Carl, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me and for making me extra special.
I didn't do that. You did that.
Well, too, my parents did it.
Nice. All right, Carl, let's jump into this. Carl, as an entrepreneur, what is one thing you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
You know, I always think about things in terms of stories. And so when I have a difficult decision to make, I'll ask myself, what's the story I can tell if I select A, and what's the story I can tell if I select B? And it's not really so much about spinning it as it is, which one of those stories do I feel better about in my life? You know, so I'd say that's probably been a big part of it, especially the last 6 years. It's helped me tremendously.
Nice. So thinking about the story, so does that mean that where you're at today, you like chess, like you like to think how many, like a number of steps ahead and see where that story will lead you and if you like the way that kind of concludes or goes?
Yeah, absolutely. An example of thinking it through from a story perspective was we had this amazing opportunity at my company to work with Microsoft. And they came in and they were being really demanding, as you might imagine. I mean, we were a little guy, they were huge.
Yeah.
And I talked to the team about it and they wanted to work on it, but they were worried about the client. And so as we got closer and closer to it, I finally decided, you know, I was like, okay, well, I can tell people that we were approached by Microsoft. They were really rude to us. We decided to do it for the money and we aren't allowed to show anything or share anything. Or I can say, hey, you know what? We were approached by Microsoft. We told them they could go to themselves and I can tell everybody in the world and they can't do a damn thing. So I really enjoyed B. And so that's the way we went. But it's the same with employees, with prospects, with anybody. It's just about making sure that the story at the end is really amicable and nice and, you know, that you didn't give up on yourself just to make a dollar.
Smart. And you're right. It makes a much better story.
Yeah, I love that story.
One thing, because you actually get to tell it. And yeah. The other thing, just because, yeah, who knows where that could have went. And I find that if a deal or a partnership even is going to start with so many contracts and non-disclosure agreements and all these promises of you can't tell anybody, you can't do all this. Like, well, you haven't even told me anything yet.
Exactly.
Like, it seems like it's just, it's not, I don't know. It seems I've been in that situation and it just, I get this bad feeling in my stomach that this is not going to go the way I want it to.
And my lawyer, who's a really, really good friend now, and started off more as a lawyer, I remember him telling me, Carl, they have 9 of me in a room and they're rabid and they're dying to get out. So tread very carefully because I don't know if I can handle 9 Microsoft lawyers. I went, okay, okay.
Yeah, I know. It would not be a fun story. No, either be during it or after it or anything.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right, Carl, we're going to go back to the beginning if we can.
Okay.
Because there's this time, it seems, in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to make something big and make a difference in the world, or they simply cannot work for somebody else. Can you please tell me which side of the fence you fall on and when you sort of discovered this about yourself?
Absolutely. What a great question. So my first job out of college, I actually interned at a full service advertising agency, and I just loved that place and got myself, 12 years into it, I got asked to become president of the company. And I told them no. And it was just one of these things where I had seen what it did to them. They were there all the time. It didn't matter if it morning, noon, night, weekends. And I had a young family. I had one child and another one on the way. And so it became this realization that if I was going to have any semblance of controlling my life, I had to do something different. The other thing was I had seen all of these, just discrepancies and inequalities in the company. And I don't think it was their fault at all. I think it was just the nature of how things started and how they were ran. And, you know, a lot of times when you're running a business, it sucks, but the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? So the people who ask for money get money. The people who don't, don't. And because you're always scared about money, you just don't always take care of those people who are truly your best people. And so I decided to start a new company where everybody was equal. And it didn't work out very well. but the idea was great. And so really that was it. It was, I knew I had the best boss for me, the woman that I worked for. But it was this realization that I've got to get out of here. I've got to be home more. And you know, the other part of that story that I think is really important is I had been on the phone with a client at the previous job and I missed the call. I was about an hour late. And it was because I got the city he was in wrong. I thought that he was going to be in LA, but it turned out he was in Chicago. And I asked him about that. I was like, well, I guess I'm, because, you know, remote working and virtual companies and stuff wasn't really a thing. And he said, well, I've got a young kid. And so I've only got a certain number of God years. And I was like, God years? He goes, yeah, my kid's going to think I'm a God until he turns like 11 or 12. Then I'm going to go straight into my idiot years. So when I'm an idiot, I'll travel, I'll work in the office, I'll do all that stuff. But while I'm a God, I really want to be around as much as possible. So that was the other, he kind of tipped me over the edge and I was like, ooh, I want to maximize these God years. So I'm totally starting a company right now.
Wow. That's huge.
Yeah.
The God years. That's so absolutely true. Do you have 2 kids still or more?
No, still just the 2. My oldest will turn 14. She'll be 14 in July. And my youngest is 12. And you know, I'm kind of, there is like this weird middle ground for me. Like the eye rolls happen, but not until their heads turn. So I can kind of ignore it and act like I'm a God. But honestly, I would just say I'm a pretty cool dad now. I'm hardly a God and I'm not quite an idiot.
Yeah. They're going to stop turning their heads soon, aren't they?
Yeah. They're going to start letting me know any minute now.
It's terrible. So you said you created a company where you wanted to make everyone equal?
Yeah. So when I was at the full service agency, I was making, I guess I was making about $135,000 a year. And I was 28, 29.
And you quit.
And I did.
I love
jumped,
it.
That's jumped awesome. Out of a corner office, man.
That's awesome.
And one of the people that came over to the new company with me, he was only making about 50. And you know what? He was a chef and I was a server. And I was just, it blew my mind when we were talking about it, because employees always talk, you know, as an owner, you have to just embrace that. And I actually got to salary transparency, which is a whole nother show, but you can just throw people in a pit with a knife and see what happens if you want. That's how much fun that is. But yeah, so I wanted us to be on equal footing and we had this concept of time equity, but that fell apart because there were 4 of us who started off as equal owners. And one of them could create 5 amazing things in one day. And the other one needed 5 days to create 1 amazing thing. And I think it's just, we're all created equal, but then over time we just make different choices until some of us are truly stellar and others are doing their best, you know? And mm-hmm. so it becomes really, really difficult to maintain that sense of equality once it starts to show itself who's got value in the company.
Yeah. So four equal owners. So meaning you had three partners, right?
I did.
And then you went without partners. And now yeah. you told me right before this call that you've gone back to having a partner recently.
That's right. So with the four, you know, we had a series of rules since we were all kind of not in charge or in charge. I like the idea of not having a boss.
Of course.
And those rules wiped out two of them. If you had three strikes in a year, you were gone. And that was pretty painful. And then the others wanted to go off and do other things. So that was kind of cool. It was amicable. I bought the company from them and it worked out really well. And then, you know, that was, I had about 6 years almost of running the company. A year and a half, 2 years ago, I took about 9 months off because the company was running itself. We had an opt-in model and autonomy and Daniel Pink and all that stuff. And it was working really well. And it fell apart really quick. And when it fell apart, I got pulled back in. And I really didn't know what I was going to do, John. I was sitting there looking at it. I had started two other companies and I was like, yeah, I love EngineWorks. It's my baby. It's the first thing I ever did. And it was just kind of an organic happening that I met Ben Jordan, who is a creative director and head of customer experience at a company called Envision, who makes a prototyping tool. And we started talking and he said he was going to start his own shop. And I said, do you want a 12-year head start? And you know, he came on and right now it's pretty cool. We have completely opposite yet matching skill sets. So it'll be fun to see where it goes.
Nice. Did you say there's some point autonomy in Daniel Pink and all that?
Yes.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, so
I just saw Daniel Pink last week, if we're talking about the same Daniel Pink.
We probably are. Daniel Pink, who wrote the book Drive.
Yes.
Yeah, I had him on my podcast, actually, and I was the biggest fanboy moment. It's the only time I've listened to myself, and I totally hated it. But he, you know, he wrote Drive, and it's a lot of research, actually, from the 60s, all around autonomy and mastery and purpose. And so, you know, I had read this book. I'd gotten the opportunity to talk with Daniel, which was amazing. And it was the beginning of the year in 2013. And I just asked everybody in the company pretty much two questions. And the first question was, if you could do anything you wanted, time and money didn't matter, you know, what would it be? And the second question was, is there a way to do that that benefits the company? And we actually changed the company based on this. We launched a new service for one of the people who had been there a long time. And she had this great skill that everybody loved. And so we just made that its own service. It's a quality assurance service. And then for other people, we had people who kind of wanted to change jobs, but we were a small shop. So they kind of just asked, could I try some different things? And it ended up being really the two most successful years of the company. So it was really pretty amazing. And my job became more of that of, I would say, a community manager versus an owner or a boss. I was never a good boss, but I was pretty good at chemistry and figuring out who could work together and helping to resolve conflict and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's hard. It's hard being a boss sometimes.
Oh, it's so difficult. And especially because if you're doing a good job, you're hiring people that are tremendously smarter and more skilled than you. I mean, I was a theater major, for God's sakes, right? I don't have any clue about running a business. I didn't take any business classes. I've read a tremendous number of books just because I was terrified. So I probably have some level of knowledge now, although imposter syndrome is a bitch.
Yeah.
But when I sit down and look at it, yeah, I'm pretty good now. I'm pretty good at running a business.
How do you deal with the imposter syndrome?
You know, I actually have a few.
Is it a struggle?
It is a struggle, especially as a white male, you know? It's the rare white male who suffers from imposter syndrome. I've actually given talks on imposter syndrome at Women in Tech, and that was interesting. But they were wonderful. But for me, I actually have a folder in my email that anytime somebody sends me a complimentary or a thank you email, I keep it in there. And if I'm really struggling with myself, I'll go in there and just start reading nice things people have said where I help them, and actually lifts me up quite a bit. I've also got a journal that I only write down when somebody sent a card or said something. And it may sound, I don't know, maybe that sounds a little bizarre to some people if they don't have any issues with self-confidence, but it was one of those things for me that, man, it just picks me up a lot. And I've also got a handful of friends that I can contact and say, man, I just don't know what the hell I'm doing today. I can't figure it out. And they basically just say, well, it'll be fine, man. Just power through. And sometimes you just need that. You just need another human being telling you, And especially when you're remote, when you're pretty much working in a space by yourself, and you know,
yeah, you can go
to the store and see people and go, "How are you?" But it's just not the same as somebody who understands what you're going through.
Yeah. I love that. The folder in the inbox, because you get these emails and mm-hmm. they're great right at the time, but then other stuff happens. Life happens, things, and then your business has to go different ways. And you're just like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's nice to go back probably and have those.
It's amazing. It really is wonderful.
Yeah. That's cool. And I mean, the not knowing what you're doing, it's, I think just since I've started this podcast, it's helped me deal with that imposter syndrome so much, because I've realized talking to so many smart people like yourself that really so much of this business thing, most of us don't know what we're doing until we do it.
Right.
And then we're good with it. As long as you have that confidence to do it the first time, you're good to go.
I had somebody that I worked with call me out once because, you know, I was in charge of new business, and they said, "Well, I want to listen in on new business. I want to get good at it." I went, "Okay, great." And she asked me, she goes, "Can you give me like a primer of what you do ahead of time?" I was like, I just wing it. I don't really do anything. And then we got on the call and I started, you know, talking to the customer, to the prospect, and asking them what got them excited about the product, why they thought the product was, you know, a winner, and what did it mean if they didn't succeed? Like, because we like to not take a checklist client. We like a client that needs to win. You know, that's the kind of thing we're all about. And she listened afterwards. She calls me, she goes, "You're a liar." And I'm a liar? What did I do? And she goes, "You might not write it down, but you are preparing for that. I guarantee you're preparing that for a few days." And I was like, "Oh, I think you're right, because I did check it out and I did think about it." And so it's in the back of your mind, but I think you're right. That level of experience, after a while, you just get in a groove, right?
Yeah, definitely. All right. So we've found out, I guess, from the beginning, and now for the last 10 minutes, even, all these things that you are pretty amazing at. So every blog post, every expert tells us the 80-20 rule. That's all they want to talk about now, right? Do 20%, get 80%. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest.
Right.
Carl, can you please tell me something in your business that you are absolutely terrible at?
Oh my goodness. I'm horrible at focus. I will chase every shiny thing that comes along. It's funny, when we were a located company for a long time, and you could see the look in their eyes when I would walk in and be carrying a book. They were like, "Oh God, he's going to change everything. Who gave him that Jack Welch book? Get that away from him." So yeah, I would say focus is really the toughest for me. And it does cause problems. And it's one of those things that when you try to explain to somebody, "I'm not good at focus," it sounds like you're lazy and you don't want to document things or something like that. The truth is, I just buzz around and really love hearing what different people are working on. So it's difficult. Focus is definitely my weakness.
And do you think your new partner is going to help with this? Is this one of the reasons why you put this into place?
Well, I was actually going to shut the company down. I was at this point where it was like, we'd had a horrible fourth quarter. We had a transparent layoff where everybody talked about it and how it would work and this sort of thing. It was very painful. And there were only a handful of us left when that happened. So it was really interesting with my lawyer, because he was like, "Well, if you do this, then he can that, and this, he can that." And then I would look at my lawyer and I would go like, "You realize I was going to shut it down?" He was like, "Yeah, let's make it as amicable as possible." I'd be like, "Yeah, I mean, if this guy wants it, let's let somebody want it." The best was my wife, though.
Yeah.
I was telling my wife, I was like, "I don't know, he wants equity." And she goes, "He wants equity in the thing that you don't want." And I was like, "Shut up, okay? I got it. Yes." Hey, this thing's in my yard. Do you mind hauling it away for $5? Yeah. So it was like one of those things that was just, it was just crazy. But no, you know, Ben, his real skill is understanding customer experience, which I have some, you know, knowledge of, obviously, just being in business. But he's an amazing designer and developer. He's got all of these different skills that I absolutely don't have. And I think we complement each other, because I really don't want to let him down. So that helps me to focus on what I'm trying to achieve for him. And I think he's got some of the same thing. But we're building a company over again from the ground up. And I'm part of a group called the Bureau, and we have all of these different events for owners and creative directors and different types in the web industry. And so I have all of this knowledge of how some of the best shops are doing things. So that's been the fun thing with Ben, is it's truly like having a blueprint to create an amazing company, and at the same time trying to get cash flow positive, which we've done in 90 days, which was great. So now it's on us if this thing falls apart, because we have everything in our favor.
Now you have everything in your favor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's going to feel like shit if we fall apart.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So let's see if we can talk projects, Carl.
Okay.
So projects, we can, let's see if we can focus like personally with you, because it seems like you do other stuff besides EngineWorks specifically, or it could be within the business, but you have a hard time dealing with shiny objects and you like to take the new thing and run with it. So how is it? Is there a process that you go through in your head right now when a new idea comes across your desk or your inbox or a book? How is it that you decide a new project is something that you should put your time and effort and resources into?
You with the questions, always the great questions. You know, it's a feeling. It's not analytical. There's not a filter. There's no algorithm. It's truly a feeling. And sometimes it's a struggle. I'm not overly religious. I do like a lot of the tenets of Buddhism, and I feel Taoists would be really cool to hang out with because they'd never get mad at me. But one of the things I would say is, especially if it's like a decision on what I'm going to focus on. For example, I was really supposed to peel away from the company and let Ben just run with it. But it started looking fun again. It was almost like there was giggling going on behind a door and I wasn't allowed to go through the door. And I told him that. I was like, hey, what are you doing in there? That's my ex-girlfriend. So one of the things I did, and I told Ben, I was like, it's obviously a conversation two of us have to have, but I live in Florida. And so if I'm really trying to decide if I'm going to make a shift, I go and sit in the sun. I know it sounds like hippie shit, but I'll go sit in the sun and again, just try to figure out what's the best thing for me and the people I care about. And normally, you know, the answer, I mean, you know, we forget that as primates, we have instincts and we can kind of tell when something is good and something is bad. So that's a big part of it. And then I also look at my other commitments that I've made, because it sounds kind of like a little bit like a catchphrase or a soundbite, but I try to optimize my life for sleep, especially now that, you know, with the newer technologies like Fitbit and the different things, it's real easy to see how well you're sleeping. And so if I don't sleep well, I try to figure out why. And a lot of times it's because of commitments that I've made. So if I've got too many commitments, that will keep me from changing direction. But if I've got an easy way to renegotiate and I can, you know, do something that feels really positive, then that's absolutely the way I'm going to go.
Optimizing your life for sleep.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's cool to pick one variable that kind of, if that varies too much, then you know you have to look at other variables in your life and what is affecting it.
Absolutely.
That's nearly brilliant in its simplicity.
Well, and sleep has been, it's such a health factor. Lack of sleep leads to obesity and diabetes, heart disease. I think it's 40% more likely to have a stroke or stroke-like symptoms if you don't have accurate amounts of sleep or good amounts of sleep. And then almost every form of mental illness is associated at some level with sleep deprivation. So it's like all of these things really come back to sleeping. And so I've studied it quite a bit, believe it or not. It sounds kind of silly, but it's really fascinating.
Yeah. And sleep is just pretty awesome too.
It's amazing, isn't it? When you get a good sleep. I was out of town all last week. And it's funny because when I'm out of town, my sleep suffers, my resting heart rate suffers, all these, I'm dehydrated because I'm drinking more, I'm sleeping less, all of these things. And then I got home on Saturday, I had like 11 hours of sleep. I mean, when I woke up, I was ready to tackle the world, but everybody was on the weekend. So I was like, damn it. So instead I just threw the ball for my dog. It was fine.
That works too. All right, Carl, we're going to end off on a question that I'm looking forward to your answer because of your maximizing the God years that you mentioned earlier. But there's this theory I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap.
Okay.
So we are, as entrepreneurs and dreamers and always wanting to do big things, we're constantly pushing and looking forward and setting goals 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years into the future. And as we approach these goals, usually even before we hit them, we set loftier, bigger goals further into the future. And it's a constant struggle of when I get there in a month, in 3 months, in 6 months, everything will be better. My business will be there. I will have accomplished this. And we oftentimes fail to stop, turn, and look around, like look behind us at where we've come from and what we have accomplished, and really kind of just enjoy it and admit that we have been through and accomplished a lot. So could you, Carl, right now for us, could you stop, turn around, and look at what it is you've done in your career as an entrepreneur and tell me how you feel about it?
Wow, I feel pretty good. You know, I've helped a lot of people. I've had a lot of people come through the doors at Engine, and, you know, specifically those last 12 years, and they've all gone on to do really, really good things. I used to, one of the questions I would ask people when they, or one of the things I would say to people when they first came in was, hey, you're probably not going to be here your whole career. That's just not the way things work anymore. But my job is to make sure you leave for a really, really good reason. It's only if you leave for a bad reason that I haven't done my job. Right. And, I only had one person that I had to talk to about the bad reason. So figuring that we have like 60 plus people come through, I think that's a pretty good percentage. So yeah, you know, looking back and looking at everything that the company has done and other businesses I've spoken with and things like that, it's a sunny feeling. I've got a smile on my face and thank you. It's a gift, John, to ask me to turn around and look at it. Cause you're right. We're constantly looking forward and sometimes we forget the positive impact we've had on people.
Yeah. And I love how you mention all these people that have come through and worked with you and for you and have gotten to go on to big, cool things. That's amazing. It's an amazing way to look at it. So that's very cool, Carl. So this has been a lot of fun. I know that it's a good interview when I spend lots of it laughing really loud at the things you're saying, because it's good. It's always a good sign to me. But we've got to mention in passing, Carl, you and your business. Could you specifically tell the listener where they can go find out more about you and your business, please?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the web's obviously the best place, and it made a lot of sense over beers. Trust me, the way we spell the name. The company's called EngineWorks, and it's NGENWORKS.com. And if you show up there, you can find out more about us. We've got a podcast right now, Friendly Fire, which you mentioned a little bit, John. And that's actually a weekly show about the struggle of bringing on somebody new to run the company that I've been running for the last 12 years. So it's kind of funny and it's extremely honest and painful.
Excellent. And are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I'm just at Carl Smith, and that's C-A-R-L Smith.
Excellent. I'm going to link to your Twitter. I'm going to link to EngineWorks, Friendly Fire podcast, and the book you mentioned, Daniel Pink, Drive, in the show notes for everyone so that they can easily find all that stuff. And I welcome everyone to go reach out to Carl on Twitter and tell him you heard him on the show. So Carl, thank you so much for taking the time to join me, and just please keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
I appreciate it, John. And I had no idea it was going to have so much fun. What a great show.
Pleasure's mine. Thanks, Carl. Carl, thank you so much for joining me. I really, truly appreciate it. And I have to say, it's still a bit weird that you started mentioning Daniel Pink right at the beginning, because I had just seen him a couple days prior, and I don't know, maybe he's that popular. I don't know. He wasn't totally on my radar until then. So I found that weird. That was cool. It was really cool. So Carl, he said he's a smart, smart guy, right? He's done a lot of stuff, and he's doing a lot of stuff. He likes to be non-busy. He's very anti-busy is his thing. Yet it seems like he does so many things and has accomplished so much as an entrepreneur. Plus, he's raising two children. Does the whole nother feat unto itself. And he's trying to maximize his God years, which now you get. So during our conversation, Carl said a lot of smart things. He did, didn't he? He did, totally. He said a lot of smart things. But there's that one thing that he said, that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I actually have a folder in my email that anytime somebody sends me a complimentary or a thank you email, I keep it in there. And if I'm really struggling with myself, I'll go in there and just start reading nice things people have said where I help them. And actually lifts me up quite a bit.
And that's the hack. Whoa, Carl. This, so just to be clear, this is the I guess this is the most like sort of lighthearted hack that I've had. And it's amazing because I started doing this after you talked, because I think as we're doing, I think what makes us this type of person and like wanting to build stuff and do stuff, but I've talked about this, how we seem very secure and like we don't have any issues with self-doubt, but we do, we struggle with it horribly. And you get these emails, whether from a family or a friend or a listener or a customer, that says something nice about you, something positive. And it's funny because you can get 10 of those and then one bad one that just knocks you off because you forget about all these. So make a folder in your email. That's the most simple, beautiful hack we've had yet. And I thank you, Carl, because it works. I've had to do it. And trust me, I struggle with people saying things that might be negative, but it's whatever. It's just go and you have this list of people who say nice things about you. Isn't that awesome? I love it. Carl, thank you so much. That was an awesome conversation. And I love the simplicity and just I just love the hack. It was great. All right, guys, this has been a lot of fun. I thank you so much. Did you know that I have a new podcast? I do. You probably do. Showrunner. It's a podcast about podcasting. Also, it's about content in general, I guess. Content marketing, I guess, but in a podcasting sense. But you can definitely get more out of it if you aren't even interested in podcasting. Showrunner.fm is the website. It takes you to Rainmaker.fm, the network, and that's the site. But Showrunner.fm, check it out. It's my new podcast. I think we're on like episode almost 10 or something. I can't believe I haven't told you if I haven't. And for that, I apologize. But now's your chance to check it out. So again, this has been a lot of fun. I thank you so much for taking the time. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.